All right, and we got our first speaker, Carlos. Hey, Carlos.
I want to thank the God of my understanding for doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, which was to get out of this nervousness. I'd like to thank the convention committee. When it opened yesterday, I went into the TARS meeting, and that holds 75 people. And I was like, that's cool, you know? But I was in the wrong meeting because my buddy Charles from Baltimore was sharing in Hotchkiss, right? And that's 175. And it took me a minute to look at the schedule and say, okay, 75 people, 175 people, and freaking 500. And my nerves just grabbed hold of me. So I did a little scouting yesterday evening to make sure I was coming to the right place. And then still was a little nervous this morning. So I'm in Prince George's. I come out, and before I come down the steps, I smell cigars. And I'm a reformed smoker about four and a half years. And that's not beating up on anybody, but the cigar smelled kind of good. And when I came downstairs, I spoke to the gentleman, and I said, how you doing? And a guy from California said, I'd be doing better if you give me a hug. So I gave him a hug. And then I met my other friend, and he's from Glen Burnie, and I'm from Catonsville. So I knew that was God talking. I said, I'm on my way to get a cup of coffee. He said, well, we can make you a cup of coffee because I bought my coffee machine. I was like, no. And then I leave, and I'm walking to the car, and a young lady sitting on the steps, and she says, hi, I'm so-and-so. I introduce myself, and she says she's from California, and she's a replant. She was here in the Bay Area and then decided, no, it wasn't California, it was Florida. And she was from Florida. And I was like, God just, yeah, he spoke. I'd like to clear up a piece of misinformation. My buddy Charles identified his home group as the bestest home group in Baltimore, and that is not the case. That is not the case. The best home group is Recovery at the Center, at the Free State Service Center, Narcotics Anonymous. Pre-COVID, we met at 6 o'clock on Fridays. And it was and is an awesome meeting. And we've been Zooming for quite a while. And we're in the process of figuring out how we do a hybrid because folks want to get back in the building. So similar to this, we'll take temperatures. We'll limit the number of people that can come in. But we've brought an IT guy in. He really set it up nice where we got like a 32-inch monitor and you got speakers and you got a camera. And it just really feels like you're there. So. But I appreciate the face-to-face. I really do. I need to qualify myself. So I'm a person in long-term recovery since September 23rd, 1993. That's a long time. And I just thank God for the 27, almost 28 years that he's given me in this process. I'm the oldest of eight. And there are only five of us left now. And the reason I bring that up is I was thinking about my siblings the other day. You ever ride and just something just comes over you when you think about somebody and it's a warm thought. And the first thing is you want to sort of like call somebody and tell them I'm thinking of somebody. So there were eight of us. My brother Robert OD'd in the house we grew up in about 13 years ago. My sister found him in the basement after we hadn't seen him for a few days. I had a brother, Timothy, that passed away about 3 years ago. His 12-year-old son found him in the bedroom under conditions that we just don't talk about, okay? And then my sister, Paula, passed away on New Year's Day this year in Atlanta. She had been dealing with myeloma cancer and a bad heart. And the young folks in the family were traveling down to Atlanta, and Paula knew she didn't need to go to Atlanta. She had to have 7 transfusions of blood and some chemo in order to get on that plane. And I think she knew that her time on this earth was coming to an end. So God rest their soul, man. So in growing up in this family, I was just telling somebody, I'm an Army brat. So I traveled a lot when I was young. I lived in Germany for 3 years. I lived in Fort Belvoir, Virginia. We lived in Philadelphia. When the family went to Texas, I stayed here in Baltimore with my grandparents. And then once they came back, We settled up in Northwest Baltimore, and I remember doing the sixth grade, and that started my process. I was one of these kids that was never comfortable in his skin. Never, never comfortable. I hid early on in the TV, you know. I hid in fantasy land. I wanted to be the man from Uncle. I wanted to be Wyatt Earp. I wanted to be anybody but me, man. And then finally, my mother just said, "You're getting out of this house. We're forcing you outside." And it was like going into this strange world. And I didn't know how to fit in. I didn't. I tried. You know, the guys in the neighborhood were drinking Richards and all that other stuff, and they were smoking weed, and they were smoking cool cigarettes, and they were stealing sodas off the soda truck when the guy would go to deliver. And I tried all of that. None of it, man. I made it to high school, and then I discovered that I was a little bit of an athlete. All right, so I played football, I played baseball, I played tennis, varsity, and all of it, interesting. But I also was the first time that I smoked weed, because there were a group of us that were football players, and after practice, one guy had, you know, in high school, one guy has a car, you know, and we all ride in the car. So we used to buy a dime and used to get somebody to buy some beer, and like six guys could get off on that. You know, on just that little bit. Made it through high school. I came out and I immediately went to work in this store called Montgomery Ward's, and I made paint. I mixed paint in the paint department. But here's the thing. I wasn't a full-blown addict. I wasn't using on a regular basis, but I was stealing their money out of the register. So the addiction, the compulsion and obsession was there way before I picked up the drug. And they didn't have like cameras and all of that kind of stuff. They had the hollow columns. You know, it would look like a column, but actually the security guy would go in there and climb up the steps, and they'd have a two-way mirror up there. And the mirror was pointing right at us, and I didn't care because I still was gonna steal that money. You know, I came out of there and I went to Social Security at like 18 years old. And that's where my disease just took off, you know? I did a lot of experimenting with hallucinogenics. That was my favorite, you know, really. And people were like, "Oh, you can't do a quarter. I mean, you can't do a whole one, just do a quarter." And I just had to prove them wrong. So I used to get really fascinated sitting at my workstation, because all the floors were pastel colors and the floor I was on was pink. And I could actually see my plants breathe and a whole bunch of other stuff. So at the end of my addiction, man, needless to say, I was gone. You know, I started off free basin. It was real clean. There was an area down at the block you could go buy your tools. And in the very end, I was begging people not to throw their ashes away, because I need them to put on my Jack Daniels pipe that I had made. I smoked that shit with wintergreen alcohol, lemon extract, anything that would give you a flame. I remember that wintergreen alcohol would just chew your vocal cords up so bad that by the time you finished, you couldn't talk. But it didn't matter to me. I was just waiting for the next time, because if wintergreen was the only thing that was there, I'm going to do it. I even saw somebody use one of these big torches, like, you know, and I did that and burned somebody's eyebrows off. So needless to say, all that is, I qualify to sit here. But this topic is the joys and struggles in parenting. So, I mentioned to you guys that I'm the oldest. I'll be 66 in October. I have a 14-year-old son, biological son. So you do the math. And when people ask me, "Well, how the hell did that happen?" I'm trying to be real cute. I say the miracles of modern pharmacology. And if anybody catches that. But then when I think about it, Viagra really wasn't out back then. And I wasn't using Viagra. You know, I just hit the freaking jackpot at 51. You know, I had been in this process. I had went back to school to get my master's. I was 1 week from walking across the stage, and I found out I was going to be a first-time dad. My first reaction was, it ain't mine. And I'm not proud of my first reaction, you know, but she was married at the time. She's a minister. There's just a whole bunch of stuff going on. It's a whole bunch of stuff going on. And when she didn't get the response she wanted from me, she went crying to my mother. "Oh,
first son gonna be pregnant and he's not gonna marry me.
And my mother was like, Regina, please. I raised my son right. Of course he's gonna marry me. And of course I married her. So I found out, I was scheduled to walk across the stage in June of 2006. I found out then that I was gonna be a first time dad. My son Antonio was born January 2nd, 2007. And I was a proud papa. I went to every OBGYN appointment. I was like, once I got into it, I got into it. I did miss one, but it was an appointment that I couldn't. So we had him, brought Antonio home. Then we had to deal with the night feedings, and I learned how to swaddle and all of that kind of good stuff. And about a month and a half, 2 months into this thing, my ex-wife at the time, she had some physical complications and she had to go back in the hospital. And so our agreement was that she was going to go to her parents' house and recuperate, and I was just going to raise Antonio, and then she was going to come back and we were going to be this happy family. 1 week turned into two, turned into three, turned into four, and turned into about 6 weeks. And then I asked her, what's going on? She was like, I don't want to be married anymore, and I don't want to see the baby either. So here I am at 52 years old, a first-time dad, and I'm raising a total infant. And I am lost. I am lost. But God in his infinite wisdom, man, he gave me a village. And I don't know if anybody can relate to having a village, but that is, in 12-step terms, it's a support group. He gave me a village of parents that were raising young kids, and you know, I just fell into the process. I had to get him up in the morning. I had to feed him. I had to put him in the carrier. I had to put him in the car seat. I had to take him to the babysitter. The babysitter lived on a street that was like this, so you could only park in the middle of the street while you're dropping him off. And then you had to pick him up and you bring him home and you feed him and you bathe him. And I learned trial by fire. But what it did was it gave me a relationship with my son that is unbelievable. You know, about a year and a half in that process, she tells me that she wants to be back in his life again. And then shortly after that, she tells me she's filing for a divorce. And I'm, okay. I want to get angry, but once again, a support group, sponsor. Talk to my sponsor. He says, look, can't do anything about that. Just spend the money, get yourself a lawyer, and let your lawyer do work that lawyers do. You know, she didn't get a lawyer. She thought she was going to be able to do it by herself. What I talk about in that instance was I got an agreement that basically gave me everything I wanted. I didn't want any money. I didn't want any alimony. But my divorce decree spells out everything from where he spends his holidays, where my birthday, his birthday, his mother's birthday, Father's Day, Christmas, New Year's. And as far as filing taxes, so we file taxes every other year for each other. And it just made things really smooth. But this meeting is about parenting, but I want to throw a curve in there and say co-parenting. Because, you know, you ain't make a baby by yourself. And, you know, if you're together, awesome. If you're not, you got to figure out how you're going to raise a child together. And you can't do it being at each other's throats. You know, you just can't. And I had to learn that. I pick and choose my battles, because not every war needs to be won. It doesn't, you know? So my son, you know, he's 7, 8, 9, 10. We're like this. We're traveling everywhere. You know, we're in Florida for spring break. We're here, we're there. And then he starts growing up on me, and I notice this little change. And I wasn't sure how to deal with it, you know? Part of my process for raising my son is to break the generational cycle. I was born, my mother had two kids before she married my stepdad. I'm one and my sister Nita. And my stepdad, he believed in corporal punishment for everything. And he believed whatever he could put his hands on at the time, that's what he was gonna whip my ass with. And so I was determined when my child was born that I was not gonna do that. I did one time when he was about 4 months old, when he was crying insensibly when we were sitting down Fort McHenry, and I thought it was a, and after that, I don't beat on my kid. I just don't, man. Because sometimes I can get so angry that I know that I could hurt him. So I try to talk to him. Sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. Speed it up. So here we are now. He's 14 years old. You know, we just went to Bowie last week to see the Bay Sox because Rushman is there and I want to see him. That's the new catcher that the Orioles have. That's probably going to save them one day. Not right now, but so we went to see, and before we went to dinner, and it was a nice seafood restaurant. And I order and we're sitting there. So he's got these earplugs in, and it's the phone thing. I don't care where it is, it's the phone thing. In the car, it's the phone thing. In the restaurant, it's the phone thing. So I said, Antonio, does your grandmother let you do that? Talking about his maternal grandparents. She said, no, Nana doesn't like it. Well, I don't like it either, dude, you know? And I think it's discourteous. So you need to take those out. And even if you don't want to talk to me, look at me, all right? But I told somebody we've been beefing. And I need to change that term. So as 13 and 14 year olds would do, they just do dumb shit and don't even really know why. So I'm clean. He's old. So we do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. He's at his mother's 2 weeks, and he's with me for 2 weeks. And while he was gone, I decided, like I used to do when he was little, is to clean his drawers out. You know how parents clean their drawers out, throw some stuff away? I opened up a drawer at the bottom, and you would have thought it was a freaking candy potato chip whatchamacallit store. I mean, literally, the drawer was full with candy wrappers, potato chip bags, and everything. And I don't deny my son anything. I don't deny him anything. And I curved, you know, I curved. And I needed to know how to do this. So what I did was I snapped a picture, and I sent it to him, and I said, what's up with this, dude? And I ain't get no response. So I said, okay, I'm gonna elevate this a little bit. I sent the picture to his maternal grandfather and said, can you talk to your grandson and ask him why? That's been like 2 months ago. My son hasn't been home in 2.5 months. Now we see each other, we communicate. Father's Day was really hard on me. I told you about the phone thing now. So everything with him is text message. So Father's Day, about 9:30, I get a text message. Happy Father's Day, Dad. Love you more than you know. Cards in the mail. And I said, well, okay, I know I'm going to get a call somewhere during the day. And I didn't get the call, man. And in the process, I told you about the relationship with my stepdad. So we are expected to show up for major holidays like Father's Day and act like. And that man doesn't like me, and I don't particularly like him. I've made peace, and I definitely respect him because I didn't want for anything. Never not had a roof over your head, never not had clothes or anything. But the bottom line is he doesn't like me. And now I'm not sure that the fact that he lost two of his biological sons, all right, is playing a part in this. I don't know. So I'm feeling what I'm feeling about my son. I'm over here and I'm asked to pretend because my mother expects it, and I'm lost. So Father's Day was messed up. It was messed up, you know? So the saving grace once again was my support group. In March of last year, we started this men's rap, a Zoom meeting. And it got so good to the guys that we extended it to Wednesdays. So we do Wednesdays and Sundays. And I didn't share about it originally. And then when I did, man, I began to decompress. You know, somebody was saying, that's what 14-year-olds do, man. They text. They don't talk. That's what 14-year-olds do, man. They hide shit in drawers, you know? And I began to just look at the relationship and the fact that I never thought I was going to have kids, you know? I don't know if anybody knows about the stages of life. But I studied in grad school where they talk about 0 to like 5 and then the next stage. And I hit that stage of 50 and had this serious fight with God about why was I the age that I was and I didn't have any kids. Now, what I lost sight of is that I had paid for a few abortions. So I didn't want to look and claim ownership on why I was where I was at. All right? And I mean, we fought and we fought and we fought, and I was angry. And then I just like made peace. And then I'm having a son. So they, like they say, if you want to make God laugh, make plans. You know, make plans. Real quick, the co-parenting piece. You know, her mother and father are really dominating, especially her mother. Her mother basically rules that entire family. And I remember our first instance, like, I wanted to let my son's hair grow. Give me, like, 5 minutes, will you? I wanted to let his hair grow. And I think it just got on his grandmother's nerve. Now, I had locks at the time, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to lock his hair or what, but I wanted his hair to grow. His grandmother made a decision that she was going to cut his hair. And I literally hit the ceiling. And I told Regina, look, I'm his father, you're his mother. You better let your mother know that we're not going to have this. Otherwise, I'm going to do everything I can do to stop her from seeing him. And I ain't had that problem no more. But I don't know if anybody has to deal with in-laws and raising your kids, you know, where in-laws are whispering in their ears and everything, and in-laws are doing this and in-laws are doing that. What I did was I ended up earning their respect, man, because I stood my ground. And they saw that I was a good father, all right? And they just somehow, I just earned their respect. You know, for every school event, for everything, I'm there. I'm there. But sometimes, man, that co-parenting thing, it can get the best of you. So there's been some struggles, and I know eventually my son and I will repair our relationship because I love him too much. I mean, I retired about 4 years ago and just started taking Social Security, and I was doing consulting work because I sort of like working in this field a little bit. About 4 months ago, I took a job running a wellness and recovery center in East Baltimore, just in the shadow of Johns Hopkins, all right? And my plan is, because it's Johns Hopkins, you know, they got excellent tuition reimbursement. So I've given myself 7 years, all right? Which should get him through college. They do half on tuition whether you go to one of their schools or you come to Washington College. And I had no idea how I was going to pay for my son's school, and God provided. So all I got to do is get my ass up. I heard somebody talking about, I'm late, but I'm early, talking about their habits of getting up and everything. I wish I could say that. I'm trying. But the bottom line is, man, you know, I'm blessed. I'm blessed beyond my wildest imagination. Because I didn't think I would ever have this experience. I didn't. And he looks like the spitting image of me, too. But a lot of this also is his mother has substance use in her history, and evidently I have it. And so the question is whether he's predisposed. He's an NA baby, so he was raised until he just got too old and said, I don't want to go, Dad. I can stay home. You go to the meeting. And I was cool. I was cool with that. But God knows, man, I couldn't have done it without you guys. I couldn't, thank you. I couldn't have. I couldn't have. I didn't have a clue how to be a dad. I didn't have a clue about how not to let my emotions get the best of me. I didn't have a clue about how not to be a bull in the china closet. I didn't have a clue about, you know, not manipulating and getting my way all the time. It's not about that. You know? So parenting is teaching me that, and my son is teaching me that. He's a ball player, but he's also a golfer, man. He took up golf about a year ago, and he can play that freaking game. So in the summertime, he's like on the links at least 3 times a week. And when baseball season, I had to ask him to stop because his golf swing was messing with his baseball swing. But we're looking at, he's starting high school in September. I'm looking at him going to the pros. That's what I am. Not because I want it, because I think that's what he wants. So my job, as with any parent, is to try to guide them as best you can. You're going to make mistakes, you know. You're going to beat some rough periods there. But at the end of it all, I think they're going to be grateful, whether they acknowledge it or not. Because I heard a lot of dads say on Father's Day, you know, their kids called them up and cussed them out, or they sent them nasty texts or whatever. You know, they're people. You know, if you do your best the first 18 years, after that, man, you're in a support position. That's all. You know, that's all. So I want to thank the committee again. I don't know if anybody got, oh, damn, they were recording that. Did I? Yow! I didn't see that. yeah, surprise, yes. But again, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I love you. Thanks.
Thank you. Got our next speaker, George. It's all yours.
Hi, I'm George. I'm an addict.
Hey, George.
Oh, God.
Right before the convention, served my wife with divorce papers on Wednesday. We've been together for over 30 years. She told me that she wanted a divorce, so I wasn't looking forward to coming here and sharing about family, because it's rather raw right now. But, you know, I've been a stay-at-home dad for 15 years. And, you know, one of the things my sponsor had said to me, and I'm in the acceptance process right now, I was blindsided. I had no idea. That it wasn't 30 years of hell or I wouldn't have stayed in it, you know. So there was a lot of good times. And he also said that she's not wrong for wanting to pursue her own happiness. You know, being in the relationship doesn't make her happy. And I don't want to hold somebody hostage that isn't happy, you know. Clean at the age of 17. My clean date's February 27, 1977. I've been clean for 44 years. My first sponsor had told me, I wanted to sponsor people, and he told me that you have to have something in order to give it away. And so you have to do the work before you can teach somebody else how to live. And I kind of used that thinking process as what, you know, I needed to be for my kids. I had to have, you know, I had to know how to live in order to teach somebody else how to live. I was scared to death to have kids. A lot of us have self-worth issues, and I still do. I do step work daily. I pray daily. I read daily. And I talk to my sponsor. Have a home group. I'm plugged in, man. So when this happened, this was on Memorial Day, I keep doing the things that I do. My sponsor suggested that, you know, I start making a meeting a day until, you know, I get to the other side, which, you know, may be a while. I also know that through the different things in my life that I've been through in recovery, I've been through a lot of different things. Girlfriend suicide, living girlfriend, sleeping with my best friend. I had a loss of a family business, special needs child. Oh, let me introduce. This is my son, Moose, okay? And Moose has taught me a lot about unconditional love. When I pick up my car keys, he starts putting on his shoes. Doesn't matter where we're going, doesn't matter for how long, he knows that I'm going, he's going. He's sitting here right now, because if he sits there, he'll be laughing his ass off at me because he knows I can't reach him. So when he's in reach, we have a little bit more control here, you know. Can you tell him something? There you go.
Well, after here, Moose.
Yes. Moose has autism. He's nonverbal. He has mental retardation, and he has epilepsy. But he's taught me so much about unconditional love. And this is what I wanted to share about, you know, talk about the joys and struggles of parenting. So I was scared to death that, you know, my wife said, you know, let's have, you know, kids, you know, let's have them close together. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And you know, so, you know, she got pregnant right away. And my daughter was born September 1st, 96. And I had the Eagles game on in the hospital room. It was, you know, I gave her, you know, it was the third quarter. So we had halftime. I'd spend halftime, you know, come on, baby, you know. She's ready. And I said, well, do I need to turn the game off? Or, you know, like, I was supportive. I was there, right? You know, and the doctor said, yes. You know, I'm like, oh, well, I didn't know what you meant. It might be a couple hours. Maybe, to, you know, like, I watched the rest of the game, you know. My daughter came out. Man, that, wow. But I never knew I had that many feelings. Inadequacy, joy, ego, proud, doubt. You know, like, you know, really, you know, like I'm, you know, half in charge, you know, And then, you know, we started, you know, the baby showers and stuff like that. And my wife started, she started all these different things, like, for babies. I'm like, how do you know all this shit? Like, I didn't know nothing, you know? And I realized that the showers and all these different things that, you know, the women attend is you know, you're getting prepped for that stuff. Well, I didn't have that, you know, stuff. So I was totally clueless, you know? And you know, and it was like, it was amazing, all the different new things that, you know. So we wanted to have the kids close together, and we figured we were going to have two, okay? So she got pregnant like 9 months after the first one, and some were like, and I'm telling myself, I can be a father too. I can do two, you know, and she got pregnant, and I'm really trying to convince myself. And we go for the first ultrasound. One of the tests, they said this spina bifida test came back, like, and there was something wrong with it. And this was on a Friday. You have to come in for emergency ultrasound Monday. So all weekend, we're like, now, my mom, schizophrenic, and when I was in first grade, she went away for electric shock therapy. And mom came back on Thorazine. Mom's who raised me. Mom was just like a zombie, you know, growing up. Dad worked all the time, you know, so, like, you know, turn it down, buddy, please. And my wife had a brother that was special needs, and neither one, like, we both kind of felt like we had our life share, you know, and so, like, we were like, I don't know, what are we going to do? And they're doing the ultrasound, and they go, here's the head, oh, and here's the other one. What the fuck, a two-headed baby? They go, didn't you know you're having twins? I went, oh my God, I can't do it. She's like, what do you mean? I go, I was trying to convince myself I could be a dad of two kids, but three kids? Are you fucking kidding me? You know, like, I, you know, but you learn, like, you know, we don't know what we're capable in recovery until, you know, we walk through it. And, you know, and you know, I shared about knowing that I get to the other side. Well, shortly after, or actually right before this, I was in a family business, and my sister was doing the books, and basically she said we were losing money, so she fixed the books to make it look like we were making money. We wound up going out of business in about 2 weeks, and I had no idea what I was going to do for the rest of my life. You know, I wound up starting a new career, but actually, you know, my wife was, you know, she was in her career for a while, and she was climbing up the ladder, and we were both working like 60 hours a week, and we didn't know he was special needs yet, but that was what the emergency thing was, is that when you have twins, it throws all them tests off, and so, you know, so we were having twins, and you know, and nobody said, you know, that there was going to be any issues. Like, we didn't know that until later. Well, actually, he was 25% smaller than his twin brother, identical twins. And that, I think maybe that's where some of his issues came from. He didn't get everything he needed. But, you know, who the hell knows? It really doesn't. It's kind of like, you know, when did I get my disease? You know, well, does it really matter? Or do we learn, you know, the program on how to live? That's what's more important than where it came from, is how do we live today, and how to, you know, how do we deal with, you know, what's up here, you know? So, but anyway, you know, as, you know, he needed to see specialists and different things like that. And I was working 60 hours a week. I was a realtor, and I was a real estate appraiser. And I had a couple buildings that had like 7 apartments in it, and so like I like 60 hours plus a week I was like doing all this. My job was to get the kids off to daycare or to school, and then I had an hour drive to work. I would leave at 9 o'clock. My first appointment would be at 10, and then my wife would usually work till 9 o'clock at night. So, like, you had to be at the daycare at 6 o'clock, but because coming home, I had to leave like at 4:30, give myself an hour and a half, and there were times where, like, I'm calling, I'm on my way, like, you know, I just can't get there, and all the pressure, and, you know, so the kids were in daycare we were paying for. We had people clean our house. I drop the laundry off at the laundry service. When I got home, I take the kids out to dinner. We do takeout because I didn't have time for that. And we had a spare car because, you know, I was doing so much driving, I had to have another car. You know, and so, like, and my wife then, at that point, she started traveling, and she would be gone for, like, 5 days at a time. So now I'm doing all, like, three of them, you know. I remember a point in time where I had the two boys in each arm, my daughter standing there, and all three of them are crying, and she's like this. I'm like, God, I only got two arms. Like, what the, you know. And you know, but so I talked to my wife and I said, you know, and there was also my daughter would repeat some of the wonderful gems that the people that were raising our kids would say. I go, why the hell would you tell a 7-year-old that? Like, what? And I go, well, it's not their kid. Like, you know, if I, like, you know, so I said to her, I said, you know, like, it doesn't make sense for, you know, I think one of us needs to stay home and raise the kids. And I said, based on what you make and what I make covers everybody else doing our shit, okay? You know, like, if we just stop that, I don't need to work. I can spend my time with the kids. So that's how that wound up happening. And like a week or two later, I was scared to death because I, you know, I didn't really, but it's, you know, like, it, I knew I didn't like what was, I was working my ass off to have somebody else raise my kids. That wasn't, like, that did not make any sense to me, you know. So after about 2 weeks, you know, she says to me, do you like doing this? And I said, actually, I do. And she says, I feel so free at work. Our conversations at that point prior to that was, what time, how late are you working? Who's going to pick up the kids? What time, you know, and then I'll be home and then you can. And so, like, when she would get home at 9, I would go downstairs in my office and work till midnight on the computer. Okay, you know, like, that's, like, how, you know, it was just, everything was scheduled, you know, like, around work, and so I started staying home, and it wasn't easy, and, hell, during this time, I wasn't making meetings either, I have, you know, meetings were non-existent, and, you know, one of the things that I started seeing is that, you know, my first sponsor started talking about the miracles of recovery and how you become your own miracle as you start working the program, you know, on a consistent basis, it starts to grow. What was very subtle, but after a couple of years, I started finding myself, the recovery part was down to here, and I was like, where's the hope? Like, what, how, you know, like, you know, and my morals started reaching different levels. Like, it was okay to do this, then it was okay to do that, then it was okay, and I'm like, when did this come okay to do? When, like, I'm not that guy. Like, well, you know, I didn't have a program. You know, I wasn't, you know, doing, I was staying clean, but, you know, so, and, you know, there was a lot of anxiety, you know, with some of the stuff I took out on the kids. When we got the diagnosis of autism, when we were having twin boys, quarterback, wide receiver, pitcher, catcher. You know, that's what, you know, I couldn't wait to, and I thought, dating? And they switched girlfriends? Like, oh, that would be really cool, you know? Like, I was all down for it, okay? Yeah, like, okay, come on. You guys relate us while you're laughing, okay? And then, you know, when I got the autism diagnosis, okay, so I wanted to know, what do I got to do? Give me a program to follow. And they said, well, he's nonverbal. He's autism nonspecific. He doesn't fit into any categories. He's a one of a kind autism. Okay. And I was like kind of gearing up, like maybe my thing would be like, like autism fundraising and stuff like that, and I'll get my twins, like, who wouldn't want to study identical twins, why one's autistic and the other's not. None of that ever took place, because the type of autism he has, if they figured out something for him, it would only apply to him because he doesn't fit into one of the major categories. Man, that was like a stab in the heart. You know, there's basically, woo! We need some movement, guys, to get the lights on. That's why we're in. There you go. Okay, thank you. But anyway, you know, so they're not looking to help him. You know, and that was a really hurtful, sad reality. I also, at that point, realized that I'm not going to have pitcher, catcher, quarterback, wide receiver. God, why did you do this to me? Now, again, I'm not working the program, you know, and it took me a long time to accept that he was, like he had special needs and we were looking for a cure, and whose fault was it? And we went through like all this stuff and somewhere around that time I got back into recovery. Believe me, it wasn't like I had this thing, I'm fucked up and I need, I started wondering I used to have hope in my life. Now somebody, I've been around a long time, somebody came over to my house, Danny and Boyd, to look at my archives and my kids asked me, they set up a big camera, they wanted to do an interview and my kids asked me, what are these people over here? And I said, well, I helped write a book. I participated in the writing of the basic text, And I said, I helped write a book. And I said, that's their interest in what that process was. She said, my daughter says to me, I think they think that you're a pretty important person. And I said, no, I said I was involved in something very important. I said, I'm not an important person. It's just that I was involved in something very important that saved a lot of lives. And I used to attend a lot of meetings. She says, how come you don't go to meetings anymore? And I said, because of Steve. And she said, well, we're old enough. We can watch Steve if you want to go back to meetings. We can watch him while you go. My wife said, you know what? It might be a good idea, hon. I said, what do you mean by that? and that was in July. My anniversary is February 27th. I made a decision to go back. I actually made it back on my anniversary. Was the first meeting. It took me from July to February 27th. I would look up on the computer, at 8 o'clock at night, and the meetings would be at 7. I'll look it up tomorrow. And then a week, 2 weeks would go by. I had somebody call me up and said, hey, George, how about if I take you to a meeting for your anniversary? And I said, well, tell me where it's at. I'll meet you. The guy said, can you give me the honor of picking you up? And I said, get the fuck out of here. I said, I can make it. He said, no, I really want to pick you up, And he came and picked me up and he took me to the meeting. I can't tell you whether I would make it back, but I felt at home, but I also felt disconnected and lost. People would ask me, how long have you been clean? 34 years? 30. They'd go, what? Where the fuck, where you been? It'd be like, wow, but I'm getting off tangent. But I started back in the process and after a couple years of doing that, Chris came over to my house, Chris and Boyd. I don't know if anybody do history stuff, but Chris had come over. I think there was a party or something, but he asked if it was okay to interview my daughter. And I said, sure, she wants to do it. I'm okay with it. And he asked her, what did she see any difference in me since I started going back to Narcotics Anonymous? And she said, he doesn't yell as much. He's not as angry. And he seems to be a lot more happier, And I was like, really? I didn't see that, but there was a change. I was back on the road of recovery and that miracle was starting to get better. And that's one of the things my first sponsor told me is that, we may not see that miracle, but other people around us will see that miracle growing inside of us, So, as they got to be teenagers, I would tell them stuff you mentioned the cell phones and stuff like that and I started to, I would tell them things and And then they would tell me somebody else said this, it'd be the same fucking thing, you know. Say, hey, it sounds like a sponsee, you know. You tell them something, they go to a meeting and hear it, and they repeat what you told them back to you, you know. Like, so I've been there, done that, you know. Like, but as long as they're getting the message, you know, and they got involved with the marching band, and you know, now, so I had to, one of the things that I did in recovery is I always, if I saw somebody doing something that I thought was spectacular or different than everybody else, I would go up and ask them. And there was one guy in my area that had a couple of kids that I thought his kids were they were the best well-behaved kids. They seemed the most adjusted. And I went up and I asked him, I said, Mike, I said, you have to do something different with your kids, because your kids are like, of any people in recovery, I know your kids are like the best. What do you do that's different? And he says, George, it's just about giving them love. You know, just give them love. And I'm like, really? Like, that's it? You know, and so that's one of the things that, like, as we started having kids, I told them that I love them, you know, all the time. I made that a point, and I showed them. You know, he's a handful. There's a lot of responsibility. But I have two other over here that there's just as much, but it's a different thing. You know, as they're getting older, they're getting invited to parties together. His name's not on the invitation. Okay, you know. Man, you talk about getting pissed off, you know. Fuck you, they're not going to the party. Well, but that doesn't help these guys. You know, like, they need to be in, you know, so I had to allow that. But internally, that's, you know, you think of, you know, it was really hurtful but he's, you know, he got involved and he does, well, we're not now because of COVID. We just moved to Florida. I'm getting adjusted down there. Going for a divorce, right? You know, so like, there's a lot of shit on my plate right now. But prior to COVID, he was doing Special Olympics swimming, Special Olympics track and field, Special Olympics long distance running. This guy runs a 5K, a 3K, and a 1500 in one day, you know, at an event. And he does Special Olympics swimming. Right now, I have him enrolled in a trampoline place. That's $25 a month, and he can go every day for an hour. But man, and then we. I heard somebody talking about last night. What's her name? How am I drawing blank? That spoke at the main. Cindy, yes, Cindy Kay, she talked about being at the beach. Well, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. We ride over the intercoastal. We stop and have lunch in the parks. Like, we ride 14 miles at a shot. Okay, he follows me. You know, wherever I go, he's going. You know, I give him a choice. Beach, bike, or jump. You know, bike. You know, like, we got one word answers. You know, there's never a conversation, you know, but that's okay. We're in the store and he looks at something, he looks at me, he knows I know what he wants, and I just got to go like this, and you know, he grabs it. You know, some of the joys is he's reaching to grab something, he's an adrenaline junkie. So he'll stop right here, and you just see all of excitement and, you know, it's like a pack of Skittles, you know, but man, he's getting off on it, you know. Like, how do you not appreciate that? You know, you wake up in the morning groggy and he's a jack in the box, man, you know, like, just, he's happy to see it's another day, you know. So, like, it took me a long time to get to where he's a joy in my life. Okay, he's always been there, he hasn't changed, but because of Narcotics Anonymous, my perception of, you know, and I'm able to see him as a gift today. Wherever we go, people gravitate to him. He makes people smile. His purpose on earth is to spread joy to people. You know, I can go on about different things with him. You know, like in the supermarket, in the parking lot, somebody pulls alongside. I saw you in the supermarket. I want to let you know that the way you are with him, that just put joy into my heart. You know, thank you for being the father that you are. I'm like, I don't think people are watching me. I'm just being me, you know, and you know, I don't, like, you know, like, this is part of, like, what, how we do it, you know, and it's great to see that other people, you know, like, that, you know, they get it, you know, and And there's a lot of, I just meet a lot of special people because of him. That, you know, at conventions, people come up to me and they've said, I've watched your whole convention with him. I've got to tell you, it was the highlight of my convention. Thank you for just being you. You know, like, wow. You know, like, that's just, I'm just a parent, you know, being, doing the best that I can, you know. My other two, my daughter, she's in Iowa. She's working on her PhD. She studies viruses. You know, like, how cool is that? That's what they, you know. So, filed for, served my wife with papers Wednesday, came to the convention. After the convention, my son, other son, lives in Bensalem, which is north of Philadelphia. We flew into Philadelphia, so I'm dropping Mark and Ryan off in Philadelphia. And I'm going to, my sponsor's in Philadelphia, because that's I'm from Bucks County. I'm going to visit my sponsor. I'm going to go see my son, spend a couple days with him. And then I'm going home. I'll be home for a day. And my daughter's buying a house in Iowa, so I'm renting a Suburban. And we're loading it up with stuff. Well, that was the plan. I don't know. You know, we haven't talked to me and my wife since, but plan is I'm going to load the van or the truck up with stuff, drive to Iowa, and unload stuff at her place and spend a couple days with her, and then I'll come home, you know. But when we gave them the news, both of them said, is Dad okay with this? And my wife said, this was my decision to make. What's Dad going to do? Dad, are you going to be okay? Is Dad going to have to get a job? What about Steve? What's, you know, and I'm like, I'm going to be okay, guys. Like, you know, and afterwards, a couple hours later, my daughter called me up. And she said, me and George spoke, and we spoke for an hour and a half. We talked about how glad we were that you were our stay-at-home dad. All the places that you took us, nobody else had a dad like you. You took us to so many places. We used to take them geocaching, and all the parks we went to, and she said, we were so grateful to have someone like you taking us all the different places, and that you sacrificed your time. And I just want to say that both of us say thank you for being the dad that you were. And then she let me know, if I'm going to be homeless, I can stay with her at her new house. Said, I don't think I'm going to be homeless. I think I'm going to be all right. I don't know how much time I got left. Does anybody have a...
12?
7? Okay, all right. So, but my thing was to give them new experiences. My thing was to try and open their... I didn't, you know, my daughter asked me, what religion are we? And I said, I don't have a religion. I said, I really want you to, you know, you can go out and see what's out there and find out what works for you. And she did. She actually went to, a few different things. She went to, like, a Bible thing with a girl where, you know, they would go for hours. And she did that for a while. My son, he's kind of a little quiet. My wife thinks he might be an Asperger type guy. He works on computers. He's got gaming friends. I don't know if he's really got many physical friends, but he works. He goes to work on time. He's got a bachelor degree from community college. I think that's right. I think it's what you get at the community college. I quit school at 16. So, you know, and that's one of the things where the program really stepped up. When my daughter was getting ready for college, I didn't have any college experience. I have no idea what to do. So I had a friend of mine that was a professor, and he was from Delaware, and he was living in New York. And he was clean longer than me. He died a couple of years ago. But, I called him up, and he sat with us. We had dinner. He went through the college process and told her what to do. And he was kind of like, my college sponsor, you know, for, like, how to help the kids figure out where they're going and what they're doing. But that's what, again, you know, if you see somebody doing something that you think is great, ask them how they're doing it. You know, because, like, I didn't have, you know, like, you know, yeah, and that's how I learned a lot in recovery. Thank you, Kevin. You know, was by just asking other people, what are, you know, how do you do this? And you know, and there's a lot of different experiences out there. But I wanted to give them the choice to be who they were. And, you know, and that was, now, my daughter, we went on this college hunt. We went, I don't know, 8 or 9 colleges. Took my other son, his twin, with us, because, you know, he's only a year behind her. You know, so, like, we might as well, so we, you know, we went to Princeton, we went to Boston College, went to Penn State, we went to, I don't know, something in Cleveland, you know, and Vermont, and then down in Maryland here, we went to University of Maryland, we went to Johns Hopkins, you know, and we did all their, like, orientation, I don't know, they have a, you know, but like we sat through all that and we traveled all over looking at all that stuff, and it was all like, I had no idea, you know, but she's taking notes, and, you know, she wound up going to the college in South Jersey, and here's what happened, and I, because this is like just mind-boggling, but they were in the marching band. Marching band is, I thought football was a commitment, marching band is, and the both of them were in the marching band, and he liked the band, and is when they marched, he would march alongside, like on the side, so it was like, you know, like the three of them were pretty busy, you know, but, where was I getting at? So in the band room, she had mentioned, she was talking with somebody, and she said that she was going to double major in music and science. And the band director was in the room. And he said, "You're going to major in music?" And she said, "Well, yeah, I'm going to double major." He said, "I didn't know that." He said, "I could have got you a scholarship to this college in South Jersey." This was her senior year, right before the Christmas break, 2 days before the Christmas break. So he said, "You know, I want to set up a meeting with your parents." So he said, "She, you know, I can get her a full scholarship." You know, so we, over Christmas break, she went and did an audition, and they offered her a full tuition scholarship. But it wasn't one of the schools that all her buddies thought was, you know, like, you know, where you get a real, I don't know, what is it? I'm only going to go through my learning environment, and you know, it's not a, I forget all the terminology, but it basically wasn't like one of the top 10 or top 20 schools in the country. So, you know, like, I don't really want to go there, you know. And so we forced her to go to an orientation class, and they had the president of honors, like, they did a presentation, and she was a bioengineer and with a minor in music, okay, and they broke up the groups, and I told her, I said, "Look, you can get out of this school, not have any college debt, you'll be buying a house before any of your friends will, because they'll have to pay off their debts first," and I had introduced her to people that are still paying off their debts in recovery, you know, and I said, like, you know, you don't have to do it, and they're like, you know, go. She didn't talk to us the whole ride to the school. She was so angry that we were making her go. She went off in this group where that, the honors president, and she asked her, kind of like what I did, you know, ask people how you, and she said, "No, I'm really happy here. This is a, you know, I'm really glad that I picked this," and so she came back from that group and she said, "Dad, how do I sign up?" Like, you know, again, nothing that I say matters, you know, but she hears somebody else that's a college student that says that this is the right school now. And so she wound up going there, you know, now she's, you know, she's working on, you know, but like, so there's a, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs, and you know, you just, you do. I offered all three kids kind of the same thing, and I got one that just, she'll probably be in school for the rest of her life. I got one that kind of, he's not a social guy, and I got one that just is a love bug, you know, like, you know, so you don't, all you can do is you present, and what they take and do is they do. Now, you know, as a parent, you have a little more authority than a sponsor, you know, but it's kind of the same thing as where, you know, like, they're going to do what they're going to do. You know, you try and, you know, present them with healthy choices and, you know, put them around healthy things. But I really found that having them involved with things was a real good thing for us because it didn't, for me, you know, I get home from school and I go hang out. Well, you know, we'd all get bright ideas and, you know, but, you know, so, you know, what my shirt yesterday was, you know, our best ideas got us here or something like that, you know, so, you know, that's how I wound up being here. But, you know, I'm, you know, so soon I'm going to be single dad with, you know, with my love bug. You know, and I'm in the process of going through it. I'm not looking forward to the process, but I know when I get to the other side, I'm going to be living beyond my wildest dreams because everything that I've been through in recovery that I've had trouble accepting where I'm at today, okay, that, you know, that when I get to the other side, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. Thanks for letting me share.
I want to thank you again, Carlos. Thank you so much. And George, thank you guys. That was a very good meeting. And we have a good way of closing. I don't know. Are we allowed to?
Probably from the seats.
Yeah, we'll just do from the seats. All right.